All right, here we are. Welcome back to Bookwave, the book club podcast. We're back again for another Wavecast. I'm your host, Scotsley, joined today by Jason, as always.
Yo, glad to be here.
And a special guest on the docket today, Mr. Robert Romano. I've met this man recently. I want to thank you, first of all, for coming on to the podcast. And I also want to thank you for getting me involved in Comicsgate and getting me on the website. So why don't you give us a short little introduction for yourself and what you do on the World Wide Web?
Sure. My name is Robert Romano. I'm a public policy analyst out of the Washington, D.C. area. But I'm also the proprietor of the Comicsgate.org website. If you subscribe to the mailing list for that, you'll get every CG video and a selection of CG projects, usually on Indiegogo, in your inbox every single day. Also, check us out at Comicsgate Video on Twitter.
Right on. So I guess one of my first questions is how it got started. I know it all kind of started with Ethan Van Sciver, but I'm not really sure about the story.
I think it goes on earlier than that.
Okay. Well, fill us in then.
The Comicsgate hashtag started in the mid-2010s on Twitter, primarily criticizing mainstream comic books like Marvel, like DC. It initially began, the initial spark for the hashtag aspect of the movement was a Spider-Woman cover that got pulled. It was a Spider-Woman in a suggestive pose, I suppose, and the Mary Sue wrote about it. And then the cover actually got pulled. And then people started complaining on Twitter, and they were, at the time, hashtagging Comicgate. There was no Comicsgate yet, but in a couple years, there would be. In the meantime, people on Twitter, comic book readers, would criticize other moves by the mainstream, usually Marvel, like female Thor, other changes to the characters, I guess female Iron Man over the years, right? And then in 2017, I think that's when Richard C. Meyer, your boy Zach, started his YouTube channel. And I think that's when the movement really took off, was with his channel at the time, Diversity in Comics. And he would criticize it. And Ethan Van Sciver, then at DC Comics, was listening to Zach on YouTube, and he agreed with Zach. And then a year later, DC was not renewing its contract with Ethan, and then Richard C. Meyer and John Malin launched Jawbreakers, Lost Souls, and raised over $400,000. And within a couple of months, Ethan Van Sciver had launched Cyberfrog Blood Honey in a series of campaigns throughout 2018 that netted together, I think it was three or four different campaigns, over $1 million. And in the meantime, Ethan was helping out lots and lots of creators with their own crowdfunding efforts with his show Comicsgate Live. And he's been doing that for, I guess, 3 years now. And Comicsgate, if you go to creatorgo.com/CG, you can check out how much money Comicsgate has raised in the last couple of years. And it's millions and millions of dollars for over 200 creators I've counted and cataloged on Comicsgate.org that are using the Comicsgate hashtag on Twitter and pressing their wares. And they usually have YouTube channels, so we'll promote those, and their Twitter handles makes it easy to find all of Comicsgate all in one place. And if I were to describe it, it's a mutual promotion. That's what Comicsgate is creators kind of helping each other and networking and building their channels and really, making use of that network, whether it's through collaborations or fun and entertaining YouTube shows.
Yeah, and I can already feel the networking effect of that. Honestly, I was watching a stream last night with Gabriel El Taib, or not last night, a couple nights ago, either way. But we were just hanging out in the chat, and I met like three or four other Canadians, and we were like, hey, follow me on Twitter, and we were all linked up. So I've already started making friends in the CG community, which is really throwing me for a loop, because I've known the hashtag Comicsgate for a long time, but it's never been associated with any of what you just said, which I love everything about it, that now that I'm in it, I know what it is, but there's another half of Twitter that you have to take into account that kind of sees Ethan Van Sciver as the boogeyman. So what do we do about this public perception and all the people that call Comicsgate some kind of hate group, which is absolute nonsense? And it kept me away for so long until I realized that a lot of the comic book channels that I watched, like HowToDrawComics.net and your boy Zach, like these were all like in Comicsgate guys, and like these were the only ones making sense to me at the time. So how do we break that stigma?
Well, that's one of the reasons I created the website. And I'm currently purchasing ads on Google. So if you Google Comicsgate, it won't show up every time, but a lot of times it will show up. And that's at least one of the results. Sometimes it's at the top of the page. Sometimes it's at the bottom of the page. But I'm confident that when normies go to Comicsgate.org and they see all the different people who are hashtagging Comicsgate and making their own books, they'll just realize that it's an independent comic book movement that's critical of the mainstream, and some of the corporate decision-making that's going on at big companies like Disney, AT&T, soon Discovery. You know, we'll just meet the new boss same as the old boss when it comes to these mergers and things like that. And I think there's just a large kind of widespread dissatisfaction with entertainment nowadays. You sort of kind of come out of the Star Wars sequels, the so-called fandom menace, also very critical and kind of, I would say, sometimes allied with Comicsgate. Ethan himself was a, you know, he pushed the fandom menace as well, especially after The Last Jedi. I think they're criticizing, you know, entertainment the way Comicsgate does. I guess it could be in your face, but what's wrong with that? You know, it's a free country and right. People, you know, we're supposed to have capitalism. So I guess that means consumers. It began as a consumer movement. And then soon it was a consumer and creator movement, especially for I don't want to say ex-pros because they're still professional, right? But, you know, people who were in the mainstream and now they're doing independent and they're willing to criticize the mainstream and then try to sell their own books and build their own thing and new properties, which I think we actually need because there's too many reboots nowadays. So it's kind of cool to be in a community where everyone's like, here's my thing. You know, here's my space opera or here's my... I'm doing a, you know, kind of fantasy in a style of like D&D or Conan. Other people do superhero stuff and everyone gets to do their own flavor. So it's a very, I find, creative group and lots of new original properties to get excited about. Hey, maybe one of them will be the next big thing. Who knows?
Yeah, that's just so inspiring that we could have like so many comics coming out and none of them being held back or restricted by the rules of the big two like Marvel, DC. And now I don't know much about this, but Image Comics is unionizing. What do you know about that?
I can tell you that the union, anyone can unionize. So under the National Labor Relations Board, National Labor Relations Act, you know, they could go through the process and try to, you know, get an election to see if they can get the, they have to actually vote, I think, in order to, you know, to create the union. And so we'll see how that goes down. Well, I mean, I would just say that anyone, if you work for a company, you have actually a federal protection there. You're absolutely allowed to organize for the purpose of collective bargaining. I don't know if it's a good idea, though. I don't know if what's going to really be had out of it. You know, it's kind of like you look at the print and the big two, right. Marvel, DC, but also Image. I mean, I guess they're going to still be on the shelves and everything like that. I honestly don't know. I don't think it involves the artists though, or the writers. It's not the creators that are doing this. It's like the personnel, like you know, editors and I guess people behind the scenes.
Right. So. At this point, it could really go either way. This could push people away from Image, or it could bring them like closer to Image. It's really too early to tell so far, I guess.
I don't think it gets them in. I don't think it's going to sell any comic books. It might, you know, might make the comic books more expensive. Who knows?
Yeah, it's going to make it harder for Todd McFarlane to hold the line at $2.99, as he loves to say.
Well, that's one of, you know, one of the reasons that many people are critical of unions. I would just say, though, they're kind of a fact of life. Like, you're not gonna they've been around for more than 100 years, so people have a right to do that. Lots of people are members of unions, even if they don't want to be. Then there's right to work states. I happen to live in a right to work state, Virginia, where they don't compete. Where some in some states you have to join a union if you want to get a particular job. In other states, you actually have the freedom to choose whether or not to join a union. And so that's an issue. People can check out stuff like that for under National Right to Work, I guess, is a good organization.
Right. What do you think so far, Jason? Go ahead.
Earlier, Robert, you mentioned the word normie, and what
Yeah.
do you mean by that? Like, is that
Oh,
somebody who?
that's just urban slang. It's just, you know, modern, kind of just average, ordinary people, basically. It's
Do
just
you mean
like, you
like
know, Joe
somebody that,
Sixpack.
like somebody that reads Marvel and DC? Would they be like a normie?
You could be, yeah. Yeah, someone who grew
Okay.
up reading comics, or just, you know, whatever. You're middle class. You got a home and a family and a job and probably kids, and you are looking for entertaining things for your kids to kind of get
Yeah.
into.
I'd
You
say
know,
like
and
the
family.
average comic book reader who's not all caught up in the politics behind DC, Marvel and everything else, or Comicsgate in
Oh yeah, and they're
particular.
probably not overly political either. Yeah, you
Right.
know, just kind of like your average. When people say normie, they're really just saying you're average American. Like, who's the average American?
Sure. Yeah, I've heard that term before. I didn't know if you were like specifically relating to like a comic person
Oh
or
no, not at
not.
all. No. That's just a little slang there. But yeah, I mean, because I think when people were looking at what these mainstream companies were doing to their properties and making all these changes, which, you know, some were well received, some are more well received than others, right? But then you see kind of behind the scenes that there's really kind of a corporate push for this sort of content, and it becomes rather redundant and repetitive. And you know, I was talking on Ethan's channel on Halloween about certain aspects of how invested in hedge funds have an are creating or have an incentive via federal regulations and also federal retirement and state retirement programs to invest in what we would call woke companies that are promoting what I would identify as ostensible, mostly left-wing objectives, issues that kind of correlate with you know, pro-climate change, anti-oil, anti-carbon emissions. So there's an environmental component there. We talked about diversity and inclusion goals at companies like AT&T, Disney, also Discovery, and others that are basically saying, hey, we're going to do kind of this style content, and so please send us more money or invest in our company, give us a better rating. And so there's an incentive there, and it came about because of federal regulations. They're subsidizing it via the federal retirement plan starting next year, and that's a $762 billion retirement fund, according to Bloomberg. ESG funds in general will rise to over $50 trillion by 2025, and BlackRock, largest hedge fund in the world, $9.5 trillion, has a anywhere from $400 billion, I've seen Charlie Gasparino estimate to on their own website. They were talking about being incorporated to about $2.7 trillion of these types of investments. And I think they're mostly political. Probably the people who run them don't think so. They probably think that these are good goals. The ESG idea actually began because of Kofi Annan in 2004, and there was a couple, he tasked the UN to put together some research papers on the topic, and then there were a couple that came out that really formed a basis for the idea of ESG. And it wasn't until 2015, though, that the federal government really started pushing it via a regulation from the Department of Labor. And so people look at kind of issues surrounding Comicscape, and Ethan was really cool about it on the show. He's like, you know, we had never looked at it like this, and that people have been kind of wondering why all these corporations were, you know, seemingly making all these very similar decisions about whether it be movies or comics, in terms of these diversity inclusions aspects. And I just said, heck, it's probably in their corporate annual reports. And it didn't take too long at all to really figure out, like, if you can just figure out the corporate ethos as an investor, because they're required to, under law, disclose everything. And so it's like, oh, well, they're publicly traded companies. This should be pretty easy to research. It's very interesting to see this kind of shift towards activism, because ESG is not traditional investing. It's more investing in a cause or something you believe in, kind of like Comicsgate, as a matter of fact. If Comicsgate is a response to, as a response to that, kind of fits, because people, when they invest in a Comicsgate book, you know, it's not going to go to $1 million or anything. Like, I don't know if there's going to be a strong aftermarket for CG books, but people, like, they want to oppose, they want to make a statement, say, oh, we're not going to support the mainstream anymore. I'm going to support an independent creator. And so that's kind of like you're investing in a cause too. So that would be similar to, that's the idea behind ESG, is that there's more to investing than simply making a profit.
Yeah. My next question was going to be, where do you think it all went wrong in the comics industry? But I think you pretty much answered that. Just follow the money.
Oh, yeah.
You'll find the activists.
Yeah, and they have a shrinking market share. If you look at 2020 versus 2019 on Comic-Con, I wish I had those numbers in front of me right now, but you do see, I think it was something like a 15% decline in regular comic book sales, the monthlies. And that was offset by graphic novels and then a lot of manga and young adult stuff. And what I've read about manga is that the reason for the explosion the past few years has been uptick in streaming, and the Japanese companies, in addition to making the mangas, also have them translated into anime properties. So you have a big rise in anime, and then the kids want more. I have a son. That's exactly what he did. He got into anime, and then he wanted the books. It's like, go figure, you know? And so where did the American comic book industry go wrong? Well, in the 1990s, there were really cool cartoons on TV, probably that really helped to sell it. He had really cool movies. X-Men, that's animated series, you know, they had X-Men on the Sega Genesis. It was just like translate. They just, you know, and then just like, oh, we got to get these books. You know, we want to find out what the story is.
Yeah.
And no medium besides comics can give you as much depth as, when it comes to those backstories. You know, video game ain't going to cut it, but you love the backstory. So that's why you get like a popular comic book like Sonic the Hedgehog from Archie Comics had a really long run, like over 250 issues, because of the success of the video game franchise. And then people just wanted something extra. And that's where I think comics come in. And I think CG creators are kind of getting savvy to this. See guys like Narwhal, who does his own animations when he's promoting his books. He did it for Foreign Agent, came up with a really cool slick animation for his. It took him forever, though. So animation's really tough if you don't have an entire office of people working on, you know, like a single scene or something. And then it's going to take a really long time, especially with rendering and things like that. But I think that they stopped caring about what the customers wanted and the things that we really love, and they start cutting corners. Especially, you know, you can kind of see this transition after. Disney buys Marvel. You can see what came out before that, and then you see kind of what comes out after that. And it's not as good. And like Lucasfilm was the same deal when they got acquired by Disney. It's like, oh, you know, you start off with The Force Awakens. It's like, all right, this might be okay, but gee, why didn't they put Harrison Ford, Carrie Fisher, and Mark Hamill in the same scene together? Like, shouldn't they have been together? That would have been a better movie, maybe. Like, they could have gone on one last adventure, especially since you knew Harrison Ford was going to die and he was only on for one movie. And so people start looking at these decisions. And I think once you take it out of the hands of artists, creators like George Lucas, or in the case of Indiana Jones, Steven Spielberg, I don't know if it's going to be as good. It could be. Or you see what happens to something like the X-Men franchise after Disney takes over Fox. And you had a really successful kind of alternative in the superhero genre with the Fox offerings on superheroes, which was kind of a different take. Yeah. Than what Disney was doing, and was different from how Sony was presenting something like Spider-Man. So I find that interesting. But kind of just the corporatization of the whole thing, and then it becomes like about kind of like international, you got to make everyone there. You know why I think it's happening, though, is because of globalization. And so you're trying to sell movies that are going to translate to overseas box office. And so if the diversity and inclusion agenda, if it's misguided, but that would probably be a core rationale, would be, oh, we need to make movies about someone from a different country in order to sell, in order to sell movies to that country. So it's the idea that everything has to be represented, I suppose. But I think anyone who grew up watching American cinema would say, I don't know about that. You know, we kind of like Americana in cinema and what came out of it, even if it's unique to America. That's what makes foreign films interesting. They're going to be unique to that culture. I just watched a great foreign did we do the dubbing? Yeah, we did watch it with the dubbing on Netflix, a show called Dark, and it's based out of Germany. And you know, everyone in it is German. Wow, go figure. Did I care? No, it's a cool story about time travel. I don't know if you need all that representation. Just let people, you know, be creative, you know, especially if you're like a local filmmaker or something. Like you might, like, what if you're in like, I don't know, Wisconsin or in the middle of the heartland, you know, there's not that many, not going to be a it's not like New York City, like the, where, you know, people come from all over the world. You know, it's going to be a lot more homogenous. So people might struggle with that. And so the idea that corporations are kind of issuing mandates on that, it almost looks kind of like social engineering. And the fact that the whole idea for ESG came out of the United Nations, it's kind of like, well, maybe it is kind of a social, maybe it's kind of deliberate, you know?
Yeah, the whole thing with the, like, pushing diversity in comics never really made sense to me, because it's like, oh, we need more black people, so let's, how about Miles Morales and Riri Williams? Now we have a black version of Spider-Man and Iron Man, but I really wouldn't appreciate a white version of Static Shock. I mean, if you
could... I don't think anyone else would. I don't even think that the people promoting all of the current changes would like it either, because the changes can only go in a certain direction, can't go in two directions. And so it's not about, supposedly it's like about equity and making people feel better, but it doesn't strike me as true representation. If you just had like original characters that people really like, and there's always been diversity in comics. Exactly. As a matter of fact, I mean, like, wasn't that the whole point of the X-Men? In many ways, it was like if you go back to Giant Size, it's kind of like about international cooperation or something. Like you have a Russian Soviet member who's a communist on there, Colossus.
Yeah, it was perfect.
You know, Storm, the African weather goddess. Kurt Wagner from Nightcrawler, he's German.
My fellow Canadian Wolverine.
Wolverine, the Canadian. Yeah. And so I think that a story like that always had representation in it, kind of meeting with the dictionary definition that you might read about in, when someone says, oh, well, here's the diversity inclusion companies and the ones that are doing it best first in diversity. And they try to compete for those ratings so that they can get, you know, more weighted placements in those hedge funds, I think. But that part of it's probably fairly opaque. I don't know if you can really see who's holding what inside of these funds without actually owning it yourself. And even then, like, because when you buy a mutual fund, for example, it's just going to show you the value of the fund. But you have to, like, do a lot of research to figure out everything that's on the back end of that. And so I think there are some incentives in place. Some are driven by the government. A lot of them are driven by the private sector and Wall Street. To incorporate this sort of messaging in comics, in movies, in television. And if it looks redundant and it looks repetitive, it's because it's the same, you know, it's the same push. It's the same, they're all on the same team.
Yeah. And it's so weird to see, like, I'm just going to pull out an example. Tom Taylor on CNN boasting about how he made Jonathan Kent bisexual, and like just thinking
how did he put it?
I'm just like, just to compare that to the giant size X-Men, I don't think Len Wein got on CNN and got to say, oh, look how diverse my characters are. shouldn't you think I'm so great for having such a great cast of characters? No, he did it because that was the story he wanted to tell. Because the, like, the original X-Men stuck on an island, had to rescue them. So find mutants all over the world. It's a perfect opportunity to say, like, other people all around the world have the same struggle.
Right,
as the
there's mutants everywhere.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was a way of globalizing the struggle for mutant prosperity or freedom.
Yeah, and now you have, like, Superman, Superboy. I'm still going to call him Superboy. He's bisexual now. What does that really do for any marginalized class? Oh, this character now has something that you didn't know about him.
I don't know. It could be even counterproductive. When you look at all the negative press it's getting, it might even be counterproductive. Because it comes across as preachy, and then so people are going to complain. So you actually get a negative result. There's some who argue that actually that's what they want. They want the buzz. They want the clicks. They want people to, so you generate ad revenue that way. If you're, these media companies kind of work hand in hand. It's just about driving traffic and getting impressions and selling ads. I mean, that's the business side of the web. So that's a part of the, and a lot of the same companies own the websites that, generate the ad revenue. So they have an incentive for people to kind of say, this is controversial. Let's talk about it. And so they're getting what they want in that regard. And I think as long as it feeds the bottom line and keeps them in the headlines, that's what they're interested in. And the fact that it has a political or social message, then that's all the better. That's what the investors who are in ESG, environmental, social, and governance investments, that's what they want. They want to promote an agenda. So at least it's explicit. I suppose it's transparent if you look it up. But does that really that means that the consumers of the comic books are afterthoughts. That it's not about what people would normally want in a comic book. And I was watching one of Ethan's broadcasts on the Comicsgate Kings every Monday night, usually at around 7 on Ethan's channel. And Graham Nolan was saying how, where's the explosions? He was looking at one of the modern day covers or whatever. It might have even been this issue. It's like kind of like, what's the, used to be stories about, like somebody's aliens invading and, Superman's got to come to the rescue and, something's going to get blown up. There's like a school bus full of kids he's got to rescue, whatever. When there should be something like that. And so I don't know. It seems very self-serving to me to write stories in this manner for diversity, for diversity's sake. It's not about escapism. And if you're a parent, you probably don't want your kid to read it. So you're just going to say, oh, yeah, watch the anime. That's the safe bet right now.
Yeah.
if anything, it's just like, some of it's kind of immature for teenagers or whatever. But if the kid's like, once the kid's like 13 or whatever, it's kind of perfect. And so, like, you just want it to be predictable. It's like, oh, this is going to be like what I was consuming when I was growing up. And it's like, I can't recommend to my kid, let's go to the comic book store. It's going to suck. It's like nothing there I'd want to read anymore. Maybe I'll go find some back issues, but I could just go on eBay to find back issues. So good luck getting me to go back to the store now, especially now that I've kind of like, once you look into something like this, people don't know about this because a lot of people read comic books when they're, say, they're teenagers into their college years a little bit. They'll take a break. Maybe by the time they're 30, they're coming back to it. And, here or there, you dive in, you dive out. Some people go on forever. And just keep on reading it. And those fans who stuck with DC and Marvel all those years, they got to be like, what the hell, man? This sucks. That's why your boy Zach was so successful in kind of exposing what was going on with these comics. Even if it wasn't identifying the root cause, it was raising awareness about this. And it bred a movement that's kind of here to stay. Comicsgate creators are every day making new videos. Sometimes they'll talk about pop culture. Or promote their projects, lots of live streams, and people just saying, hey, let's make our own art. Let's make our own culture.
Yeah. Yeah, one of the stories that I find particularly inspiring is Gabriel El Tayeb, because, like, he was the colorist on that Superman book, and as far as I understand it, he was just, like, screwed out of a job basically, and he was like forced to join Comicsgate, and now he's like one of my favorite streamers.
He wanted to criticize the departure from Truth, Justice, and the American Way, right, as Superman's kind of motto there. And it's like, well, what do you got against America, Time Warner? What do you got against America, AT&T? You know, that's the way it rubs people. Yeah. And so it's like kind of, it's antagonistic of our, you know, just the fact that we have a country, I guess, or a hero. Like, can there be an American, all American hero? Like, you have to retire that phrase too, right? Like, how do they even condone Captain America? I guess they didn't, right? Because they killed him. They wrote him right out of the movies. So no more, Steve Rogers, I guess.
Sam Wilson's Captain America.
Age him out.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah,
Sam Wilson, the Falcon. So we got a black guy as Captain America, so he can, you know, tell us all about how white people are the evil America versus the true liberal good America or something silly. Who knows what they're going to do with it.
In some respect, it makes sense that, like, in real life, these guys would retire and then somebody else would kind of take on the, Batman Beyond kind of hints at this. Dark Knight Returns as well, when you get to the end there, with that whole thing. So that's kind of like what that was unique about that story. Dark Knight Returns, whereas aging Superman is saying, like, what would happen afterwards and how would the legacy go on? And that's always been a challenge for comic books, where the characters never age. But when you make a movie, it's like, oh, why can't it be more realistic? And so you kind of get those endings, like in Dark Knight Rises, he has Batman retiring after faking his death and going dying a hero, or in the case of the Marvel Universe. But I got to say, the Infinity War was really awesome. And Endgame to me was just so dystopian, so depressing. And to me, it was just a way of eliminating all of their major characters, which was unnecessary. It's like, why can't they just be in the background or something, or like do an occasional cameo? Like, you just call them in for like 5 minutes to appear on a computer screen and talk to the new Marvel superheroes or whatever. It's like, no, but they had to kill everyone. And it was pretty, and probably to get out of contractual obligations, if I had to guess. Like, these guys were too big of stars. Like, they just couldn't afford them anymore. So you just want to kind of make, so to really, there you go, cutting corners again. It's like, you wouldn't, in a Marvel universe, a properly functioning one, like, of course Iron Man's still there. Of course Steve Rogers is still the leader of the Avengers with him. Of course all these guys are still there. So it's, I think, kind of that pressure to make it realistic, coupled with all sorts of, profitable, non-profitable considerations that make the movie going experience nowadays, the adaptations aren't going to be as faithful. Although I'm hearing good things about Dune. Have you guys seen Dune yet? Is it any good?
I haven't yet. I really want to. Have you seen it?
Yeah, I've seen it. It's good, but it's just part one. So,
Okay. Well, I could just watch the miniseries in the meantime, get kind of whet that appetite or dust off the books too. My wife's a huge fan. I was hoping to hear good things about it. And I'm not surprised that they're not able to get through it all because it's so dense, but they just announced the sequel. In 2023, we'll get Dune Part 2. So maybe it'll be a huge franchise and we'll get the whole story. That would be pretty amazing considering the production value on this one. It looks amazing.
I'm still working through the audiobook, so.
Hey, was it in Ant-Man versus the Wasp where Captain America basically turns into an old guy?
That was Endgame.
That was Endgame. Okay.
Yeah, I kind of liked that ending because it rounded out his arc.
No, I'm not gonna say it was a bad ending. I just wonder about like what are they thinking? Like, why would you get rid of all of your marquee characters in a vain attempt at trying to shine a light on all of these brand new characters that everyone loves, and it's like, but they don't love them. That was the most inexplicable part of their marketing strategy, particularly with the comic books, when they still had those characters, because Thor and Iron Man and Captain America were at the height of their popularity. But what did people see when they went to the comic book stores? Those characters weren't even in the books.
Right.
They're all gone. It's like, what the hell? There's definitely a disconnect there. Explaining it. I mean, I don't know why they want to do that. I think they perceive it as like toxic masculinity or something. So it's just like, kill off all those characters.
I think,
and you know,
Marvel...
kill all America's heroes. It's pretty insidious. I don't know. I don't think they have good intentions. I'll say that.
Yeah, I think Marvel in particular shoots themselves in the foot a lot, because one phenomenon that I realized was when they were coming out with all those Disney Plus shows, Comixology was pushing all of the like the back issues, like check out the stories that inspired what we're looking at here, instead of like pushing like the modern Captain America or the modern Sam Wilson book or the modern WandaVision book. It was old stuff from the 80s. And then right after, they complained that people were buying back issues instead of the new books, because these are the ones that you're making people interested in. If you're watching the MCU, you want to watch the Avengers form in the comics too.
I agree with that. And I think people want to see what they consider to be canon. Right. And just once you deviate from the canon, they don't believe in it anymore. They're not having fun anymore. And it's like, this contradicts previous continuity. You run into all those problems, of course, when you have a franchise that's going on for 30, 40, 50 plus years. But they used to be true to it. There used to be a reference point. There used to be like, I remember all the time reading the X books. They would always have a reference to some other issue about something that was going on, even if it happened 15 years ago. And there would be a way of cataloging that and going back in time and seeing like what that continuity was. It was really fun. That's what makes the back issues so really, frankly, magnificent. And just like a kind of a masterpiece of a connected universe and how it really functioned as one, a shared universe, even that with all these different writers. And there's a reason why, you know, like Netflix, for example, when they make Daredevil, they're going directly to Man Without Fear. They would have never taken the risks today that they were taking back in the 80s or the 90s with a lot of this pulp stuff, because they were really kind of pushing the edge and the boundaries of the Comic Code Authority. And you really start to see some really good art come out of that. Some of the darker and grittier stuff that you see coming into the 90s. I just don't feel people have that same flavor today. Although I think stuff like that would sell really good, just considering how well manga's doing when they pursue similar genres. And it's not just merely like a different, drawing style. It's giving people what they want in terms of action, romance, and seeing people that they expect to see, and not having some overriding narrative or moral kind of political message. People can tell when they're being proselytized to, and they don't appreciate it. So they're going to go find. They're going to change the channel. You're like, oh, that's there's that bullshit again.
Yeah, I mean, if someone is asking me to recommend them a really good superhero comic, I have to go back to like the 80s, the 90s, or like My Hero Academia. To go to manga is a perfect example of a great superhero comic that, like, you could have found something a lot like that not so long ago in the West, but we took a turn down some road and comics have never been the same.
Yeah. No, and I don't think it ever will be, unfortunately. I don't think it'll go back to the way it was.
Yeah. I just see way too much activism in it. I made one video a while ago when we were reading Jordan Peterson's book. Have you heard of Jordan Peterson?
I know who he is. Okay. Yeah, you know, as it turns out, Ethan Van Sciver did the illustrations in his book. If you didn't know that. Yeah, he actually, back when he was still at DC.
Okay.
Really? Wow.
Yeah, I think it's his first book or like whatever, the one that's really famous.
Okay, I'll have to look into that. But there was a big debacle in one of the Captain America books that came out where if you read it, it was very clear that the author was trying to say something about Jordan Peterson, saying
the Red Skull was Jordan Peterson. that's what it was. It's like, Jordan Peterson's right a Nazi. Now. It's like, wow.
Hail Lobster is the merch campaign that he ran afterwards, and he said, well, if they're gonna call me a Nazi, I might as well run with it. So he did the Hail Lobster campaign. So it's a Hydra logo, but it says, clean up your room and tell the truth, because those are the biggest rules in his book. It's like, that's what the Red Skull says. Clean up your room and tell the truth. Hail Lobster.
How harmful.
Yeah, I went off on like 15 minutes, just like, I was upset. Ask Jason here. I was upset. I just kept ranting on about, like, how dare you say this garbage about Jordan Peterson? Well, and how dare you tarnish the legacy of Jack Kirby? You should be ashamed of yourself.
Right. Well, I think they're, you know, it's kind of cheap. They're breaking the fourth wall by doing that, you know. So you're trying to, what do you watch sports for, or a good movie or whatever? It's to forget about what's going on in your, you know, day-to-day stress of, you know, work and family, you know, taking care of your family and your home and everything. And it's also to get away from all of the problems of the world. Yeah. So, you know, I mean, by it being so activist-y, I think that it ruins the escapist experience. But what it also does is create an opportunity for others to step in and offer something that people really do want. Because there's still artists out there. I mean, you're still going to get your occasional, like, Dune or productions that are really high end. Thinking good, you know, because there's a lot of good stuff out there right now still. And so you just kind of have to sort through it. You know, you're more liable to find something you haven't seen before when it comes to indies and things that start out as indie but maybe get really big. Sometimes they actually do a good job. Show I'm enjoying on Amazon. It was on Sci-Fi, The Expanse. My wife loves the books, and you know, we've been watching the show too. And so there, you know, there's and it probably has, you know, probably it hits all those check marks on diversity and inclusion, but doesn't do the story and the people who made it didn't present it in a way that was all preachy. So you don't care. It's like, oh yeah, they did all that D&I stuff, but I don't care. It's a cool story. And so, you know, some are going to be more successful than others, I think. And usually, I think they'll usually be more successful when you're dealing with original characters. It's when you dive into a very well-known brand like Batman or Superman or X-Men or something, where fans, longtime fans, are going to have something to say about that. And you kind of see that kind of clash of generations going on. Sorry, I dropped my microphone. but you see that in D&D nowadays, from the old school players versus the newer generation, and some of the decisions that you see at Hasbro right now, kind of a similar situation where, you know, they're making all sorts of changes to the canon of the game that was established back in the 80s and the 70s and the 80s. And fans are kind of pushed. A lot of fans are pushing back on that. And they say they prefer the older stuff. And I can't say I disagree.
Yeah.
I kind of knew, like, in the back of my mind that Wall Street and the big companies were pushing this diversity stuff. But are there other countries that are also pushing it into our media?
Oh, yeah. Oh, these are globally traded companies. So they're kind of, think of corporations without walls. I mean, they're transnational. So are other people, are they directing this investment overseas? The answer is yes. And some cultures are more resistant to it than others, I would think. And so, like, something like China is kind of a closed market. And so what gets offered there may differ drastically from the versions that we see here. Something like Japan, I think they're gonna put that money in there. But I don't think that, I think that the market there is still going to determine what comes out. And what's going to be the most popular thing. Whereas here, you can kind of, they spend all their money on marketing. And so they're pre-generating the returns that they're going to get at the box office. Usually by holding back other offerings. So because these media holding companies own so many properties, they get to determine, kind of collude together, what movies are going to come out that year. And so by not offering something that people might otherwise want to see, they're going to call attention to the products that they do want to sell for that particular year. So I noticed that they hold a lot of stuff back, probably unnecessarily. Imagine all the cool stuff they could be creating and like all the cool movies we would have had if that weren't occurring. But you keep seeing like the same that's why they'll keep recycling the same characters, because they don't want to take any unnecessary risks. It's like, oh, well, you can make a Superman movie and you're guaranteed to make $500 million or whatever their bottom line, or $200 million or $100 million. You say, okay, yeah, we can spend $1 billion and we'll make $100 million. Okay, that's a good deal if you do it, you know, a few times a year. But you're not going to do anything new. So you get a lot of, they keep doing the, redoing the origin stories. That's another example I've noticed. They never want to really break too far away and try to get a really sequential thing. That's why what Marvel did was so, you know, ambitious, was try to create that shared universe. But you see how it ends, and then it's like they're tearing it apart just as soon as they put it together. So that's kind of, I think, kind of disappointing the fans. It destroys the illusion that there's anything going on here. I mean, it's almost like, you know, professional wrestling had better exits and departures, because at least the guy would come, you know, he'd leave the show, or, you know, he'd be back in a little while or something like that. Even in comic books, that was always the case. You know, like Magneto died, but really dead. Kind of finality to it all. People want they like the idea of the hero riding off into the sunset, and then he's going to go have lots of more adventures. And once you kind of break that facade, you're kind of dosing it with realism. And that might not be what people want to see. It may be what they want to see. If there's like a version of a superhero world that's like a little bit more realistic, that can be cool. But if everything's like that, then, you know, then it's not so innovative anymore, is it?
Yeah. One thing that I've learned from comics is Magneto's never really dead. But like, you see like all of the heroes giving their mantle off to all these other characters, but then they're still around, like Logan's daughter, like Laura's now Wolverine, but now Logan's back. They brought him back to life. So what was the point of that? Now you just have two Wolverines and make everything confusing.
Well, I'm sure the fans were happy to see Logan back. I mean, there is that always going to be that demand to always, you know, to bring those characters back and show them to a new generation.
I always think that they should have just like, give them their own hero identity, not like Wolverine 0.2 or whatever. Just Laura can be her own character. She doesn't have to wear the Wolverine outfit to be noticed. That was kind of my problem with Miles Morales Spider-Man too, because he's a great character. His origin is fantastic, but they cheapen him by just saying, oh, he's the Black Spider-Man. Like, couldn't he have just been all right on his own? Or when they like have rumors of James Bond being a female in the next one, like, you can make a cool movie with a James Bond-like character and not, you know, just attach this label to it for, you know, just money. Like, you don't have to ruin all the old stuff to make something new good.
No, I agree with that. I don't know why it seems to be so necessary, but it we're just going to have to live with it. That's the way they're going to tell their stories. But what creators, people who don't want it, who don't like that, can do is just, you know, tune it out. The mainstream's not as important as they think they are. Right. And they're only as important as the power that we give them with that. So I would, you know, if I could leave your audience with anything, it's just that, you know, you can kind of choose your own way, to choose what you like, you know, because you're going to have to sort through a lot of crap, though, when it comes to, you know, entertainment. But, you know, if it leads to inspiration, if it leads to you saying, hey, I'd like to, you know, make my own, comic book, if that's your thing, then, you know, check out Comicsgate, check out comicsgate.org. You can, you know, you'll find lots of new creations and people who don't have to, whatever, they're not answering to an editor, they're not answering to a publisher, and certainly not to any hedge funds. So, you know, it's just like, what's cool, what's imaginative, what's going to be fun, and new characters that we can kind of learn their backstories and kind of recapture those feelings we had when we were younger, when we were children, and we got to know new characters for the first time. Like, remember the joy of like watching Transformers after school or something like that. Those were new characters back then.
Yeah.
And so there's no reason why children today and future generations can't have the same thing. I think that those industries can be recreated, but we're going to have to do it ourselves. And it's probably going to take a long time, before there's some infrastructure there to accommodate, I think, what is the real market demand. So, you know, for, you know, people want something original. It's not for everyone. Some people like the cheap plastic, crappy toy. They don't need all of the detailing and everything like that. So, you know, different, you know, people have different tastes. So I think, but there's room for all of us. And so I hope that, you know, maybe we come away with a message against like cancel culture. It's not necessary to get rid of people that you disagree with in order for your vision of something to succeed. And unfortunately, we see a lot of that too behind the scenes at these big companies with their hiring, which I think is discriminatory.
Yeah.
Well, real briefly, like when you go to comicsgate.com, are all of these indiecomics.org, thank you, are all of these like digital comics or can you not?
No, they're mostly physical. Mostly physical. Okay. Yeah, people. Some people offer digital previews. Some people offer digital tiers for their Indiegogo projects. But most of them are physical, and most of them fulfill. I can say that from experience. I've backed more than 250 books, and almost all of them deliver. Sometimes they're late. That it's about 50-50 if a book's gonna be late. But ultimately, they do fulfill. The creators are very interested in kind of getting their vision out there.
Yeah, it's stuff you would not find in a comic book store.
Correct.
Yeah.
No, you won't find them in comic book stores. Although
you gotta go to Indiegogo.
Ethan's talking about getting into going into the direct market though, with reprints for third and fourth editions or stuff like that. You know, or third and fourth printings or something like that. So now that you know, but the backers on Indiegogo, we've had examples where creators went to market. They went to stores before they got the backers got their books, irreparably hurting relationships between customers and creators because they felt like they were hoodwinked. And so there's people ask, like, why don't you put these book Comicscape books in the stores? And it's like, well, for starters, there's really not that much demand for properties people haven't heard of yet. So there's still people and a lot of these creators are still building their audiences. And there's not a mass marketing aspect to it. You know, the direct market, the way Diamond was set up, I mean, that's kind of folded. That whole model doesn't even exist anymore. So kind of going direct from the creator to the consumer, it's, you know, kind of, it's like a, think of like a small band that's not going to go to a big label or something. That's what it's like. So you can get the albums locally, you can purchase their CD when they show up to do the live performance or whatever. That's kind of the extent of it now, because some of these creators, they only make like $5,000 on their first campaign. But maybe like the third or fourth campaign, they're getting 15, 20, 25,000. And you can really start to scale up. And some of the, you know, creators who are not professionals in Comicsgate who have raised more than $100,000, guys like Von Klaus with Monster MD. I don't know if he got over 100, though. He might have gotten close. Guys like Narwhal does everything, every aspect of the production. He does he does digital art and he does the coloring, he does the writing, he does the lettering, he just puts the whole book together himself. He started out, he was only like doing 20,000 on his first campaign. Now he's making over 50,000. And people, they just keep cranking them out, getting more efficient at it. I'm going to try to do a book, Children of the Grave, and I'm going to try to master every single aspect of the creation process. I'm gonna try to just do it all myself. I feel like my line works okay. Doing some grayscale with the coloring, but I still got a lot of work to do with the actual coloring and the flatting process and all of that. So it's a learning process.
Yeah,
but
I saw some of your artwork. Full-time. I saw some of your artwork on the Indiegogo, but I couldn't tell if there was a campaign or anything going or not, or just a newsletter.
It's just a mailing list right now.
Okay.
Yeah, when you pre-launch, you want to build your customer base first and hopefully get a big enough list so that when you launch, you can make a big splash and the campaign can gain some momentum from its inception. So I'm only at the mailing list stage. I really need to produce a lot more pages before I can really seriously consider launching, which, you know, now I've got the mailing list, so people are going to have an expectation. When's it coming out, Robert? When it's coming out? So hopefully in a few months, I'll have a lot more pages and I can feel like I've made enough progress to, you know, have enough to show somebody. Plus I got to make a video. Everyone's expecting there to be like a cool video with your campaign now. So really, you know, it's very competitive. Like if you want to keep up with it, you got to really, have high quality, you know, offering. Some people are not going to be able to do that. But there's still going to be laborers of love there, and there's room for both. To grow and to, you know, and to meet the chat and the and these creators' YouTube channels. Get in there, and you're going to have a lot of fun. You'll meet a lot of people, and you know, you get to share, kind of compare notes on how to put these things together. And I guarantee you're going to find something you like.
Yeah, 100%. We'll definitely put your Indiegogo newsletter on the description down below and everything, and your Twitter. And do you have a YouTube channel that we can direct people
to? I do.
Okay.
Yeah, Romano Network. And you can find me on Twitter at Robert_J_Romano. And also check out Comicscape Video on Twitter. And again, check out Comicscape.org. If you subscribe to the mailing list, you'll get every CG video and a selection of projects in your inbox every day.
Excellent. So I want to be respectful of your time. Do you have anything else to add to that, Jason? Any other questions?
I don't have any other questions, but Robert really sounds like he knows what he's talking about. And I think I think he's going to do good in his endeavor with this comic. So yeah. Good luck.
Yeah.
Oh, good luck to you guys as well. And I'll look for the podcast. Thank you so much for your time.
All right. Thank you. Have a great day, and hail Comicsgate.
Hail Comicsgate. You guys have a good night. Take care.